August 13, lucky 13, as we get closer and closer to the start of the NFL regular season, and almost very unlucky on Tuesday. NFL ultimately very lucky about what happened, or more accurately, what didn't happen when the Raiders and the Cowboys got together in California for some joint practices. And, you know, these joint practices, for the most part, have gone pretty smoothly this year. The 49ers and the Ravens had several days of very physical, very intense, very useful practice sessions, and there was no fighting of any kind, which would have been a little bit unexpected going in because of the intensity between those two teams. They had a great regular season game on Thanksgiving night a couple of years ago. They met in the Super Bowl, but no incidents, no accusations, no problems. Not the case on Tuesday for the Cowboys and the Raiders. And this had a variety of factors that really could have boiled over into a major problem. We see the receiver get thrown down by Maurice Claiborne. And then, almost like on a seven-second delay, here comes a little push, here comes a little shove. Next thing you know, it's a rugby scrum. And look at where it's happening. Right up against that fence, that short fence that separates the fans from the field. And at one point, there was a helmet swung at a Cowboys player. There it is. And the player tries it. There's a little push and shove. There's a little, yeah. All too close to what we've seen in other settings where, remember, it's been 10 years since the situation in Auburn Hills, Michigan, I believe, is the location at the time of the Detroit Pistons stadium. Not sure whether it's there or somewhere else now. There have been, over time, incidents where players cross that line. And when the line is as blurry as it is at an NFL training camp, and I know that's part of the allure of the NFL training camp, it's not like a game, although you do have to go through the metal detector and the bag rules apply and there are security precautions. Once you're there, you are pressed right up against the action in most situations. And maybe what the NFL needs to do and what the NFL should do is go back and take a closer look at any circumstance where you have that fence, player, and fan intersection where something like this could happen. If a fight breaks out, if it happens close to the fence, the fans right on top of it where, but for the grace of God, somebody didn't jump over that fence and start taking shots at one or more of the fans. And it becomes more of a risk where you've got joint practices because that's where there's the intermingling of fans and you've got a fan of one team who may not like the other team. Usually at training camp, everybody's happy, everybody's positive, the teams are 0-0. Nobody shows up at training camp to give someone the business for what happened last year. It all typically works out at training camp. When you start mixing the teams together, that's when you have a problem. That's when you have an issue. In the NFL, not much is being said about this. It's, oh, look, a video of a fight. I think it's horrifying if you look at it from a potential liability perspective and how it could have gone and the mess it could have made for the NFL. And I think right now, even though no one's talking about it much publicly, the NFL at the league office has to be spending a lot of time and effort and sweat and worry about how to keep something like this from happening again, because it could have gone very badly for the NFL. The Wildcat formation goes very badly for NFL teams, according to some, most recently Donovan McNabb, who once was the quarterback who stepped away from the center position to allow Mike Vick to come in and be the Wildcat option in Philadelphia. McNabb chiming in on the apparent intention of the Jets to use this Wildcat thing again a couple of years after the whole Tim Tebow experiment that never really became an experiment in New York. Now you've got a better Wildcat option in Mike Vick, a guy that the Jets would trust to go out on the field. And basically, McNabb thinks it's a garbage offense. And the bottom line here, no team that has a true franchise quarterback is ever going to consider using the Wildcat, because no team that has a true franchise quarterback will ever take the ball out of the franchise quarterback's hands. That's just the way it is. And I think McNabb, still feeling chafed by the fact that in 2009, the Philadelphia Eagles did not regard him as a true franchise quarterback, the kind of guy like a Tom Brady, like a Peyton Manning, two players that McNabb specifically pointed out in his comments. Those guys never have the ball taken out of their hands. Well, McNabb did, and Geno Smith will, and anybody who isn't a true franchise quarterback, if you've got another guy on the roster who can come in and run this Wildcat, what it does ideally, it dilutes the opportunity that the opposing defense has to prepare for both quarterbacks. So it actually helps the starting quarterback get better. I know it disrupts the offense, but you're facing a defense that isn't as ready to face you because they didn't have full 100% opportunity to prepare for when you're under center, because they have to spend some time preparing for the Wildcat option. That's the theory. Whether it works or not, we'll see. It didn't work for the Jets a couple of years ago because of Tim Tebow. This year with Mike Vick, maybe it will work. Speaking of quarterbacks and speaking of teams that have a couple of quarterbacks and maybe don't know which ones to use, we got to start keeping a closer eye on these rookies beyond round one. And look, I have believed since the draft that all three of the first round quarterbacks will start week one. Blake Bortles, the third overall pick, Johnny Manziel, number 22, Teddy Bridgewater, number 32. Now that we're getting closer, I have a feeling that the Jaguars mean what they say when they say Bortles isn't going to start, which surprises me. We talked about it yesterday with Mike Dempsey at 1010XL. Maybe Bortles really won't start week one. And if he starts, he's not going to be ready to go because he hasn't gotten any reps with the starting offense. He's working with the second string in practice, second string in preseason games. It makes for a weird situation if all of a sudden they say, hey, you know what, we're going to give this Bortles guy a shot here. Go ahead and work with the starting offense for the first time in your NFL career. But beyond Bortles, who apparently won't start, Manziel, who I think will, and Bridgewater, who still has a chance to take that starting job, let's consider a little bit deeper. We don't hear much about the whole Matt Schaub, Derek Carr situation. Matt Schaub looked bad in the preseason opener. Is it just a matter of time before Derek Carr takes over? I mean, they gave Schaub $8 million guaranteed. I don't think they expected that Carr would take over so quickly, but we could see Derek Carr before too long, possibly as soon as week one in Oakland. And elsewhere, Zach Mettenberger, could he climb the ladder? He delivered a late score for the Titans in week one of the preseason. He and Jake Locker, chances are he's going to get injured anyway, so it won't be a quarterback controversy. It's just a matter of time before Mettenberger is out there on the field. And how about Logan Thomas? He was 11 of 12 in his preseason debut with the Arizona Cardinals. Big, tall quarterback. That's what Bruce Arians likes. And, you know, it was regarded as the floor for Blake Bortles, number 20 to the Arizona Cardinals in round one of the draft, because Bortles is that big, tall, strong-armed quarterback that Arians had in Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger. Well, now, if Arians can get the most out of Logan Thomas, he's going to potentially be a franchise quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals before too long. So rookies beyond round one that we need to keep an eye on, because by the end of the season, you could have five or six of these rookie quarterbacks regularly playing in the NFL, and a lot of it depends on how well the starters do and how well their teams do, because at some point when it's over, bring in the rookie and get him ready. Treat the end of the regular season as an extended preseason for the next season. And speaking of rookie quarterbacks, this guy was once a rookie quarterback who threw more interceptions than any other rookie quarterback in NFL history. Does it still bother him? You'll find out if you listen to the interview, the full interview that we did yesterday for PFT on NBCSN with Peyton Manning. He's doing his annual DirecTV promotional tour. We showed some of it last night. We're going to show all of it today, and then we're going to answer all of your questions, or really at least most of your questions, or maybe some of your questions to wrap up the show. We've got the Twitter questions. We'll answer them. We'll answer your phone calls if you call in. You'll get that opportunity after the upcoming segment, which follows the upcoming break. If you stay with us through the break, you'll be rewarded with an extended interview from yesterday with Broncos quarterback and five-time NFL MVP Peyton Manning. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos trying to get back to the Super Bowl for the second straight year, hoping to finish the job this time around. On Tuesday, had an opportunity to talk to Peyton Manning as part of his annual DirecTV promotional campaign. You may have seen the rap video with Peyton and Eli Manning. I try to get him to rap. I'll tease it. I try to get him to rap. You'll find out next whether he actually does it. Here's Peyton Manning from yesterday's Pro Football Talk on NBCSN. Let's head now to Englewood, Colorado, where we have Broncos quarterback and five-time NFL MVP Peyton Manning. Peyton, it's been 16 years since you entered the NFL as a rookie with the Colts. What would Peyton Manning of 2014 tell Peyton Manning of 1998?
probably a long conversation there, and I'd love to be able just to take him, you know, for a number of different situations on the football field, in meetings, you know, kind of just all the things that that you have to go through as a rookie. Unfortunately, Mike, you know, even with advice from an older player, you know, and believe me, I asked the questions to the Steve Youngs and the John Elways and the Dan Marinos, the guys that were still in the league when I was a rookie. But the best advice was is just to learn from these bumps and bruises that you're going to have as a rookie, and experience is your best teacher. And so that's kind of what happened for me in my rookie year. I am not proud to hold that NFL rookie record for interceptions, Mike. I keep praying for one of these guys to break it every year. You got to be a 16-game starter to break it. These guys that are starting 8, 9, 10 games, you know, it's just not enough time to break it. So hopefully one of these years somebody will break it. But I did learn a lot in my rookie year, and we weren't very good. I wasn't very good. We went 3-13, but because of what I learned in my rookie year, we went, you know, 13-3 the next year. And I don't think we would have done that had I not played as a rookie.
And looking back at the entire course of your NFL career, other than the Super Bowl win, what's the one thing that stands out that you're most proud of?
Well, I played with a lot of great players. I played for a number of coaches. I think just the off-season work that we put in every single off-season, the guys that I played with a lot of guys that like to work, guys that are real pros. And all that hard work has paid dividends for us during the course of the season. You know, winning a crucial game, converting a critical third or fourth down conversion. I guess what's been rewarding for me is when you put the work in and it pays off for you, that's some of the most rewarding parts, I think, of playing football.
And this offseason included the unfortunate task of looking at last year's Super Bowl. What's the thing that stood out to you the most when you looked at the film from last year's Super Bowl?
Yeah, we addressed that, you know, during the course of the season and during the course of the offseason. You know, from the film standpoint, in the weight room, out there, conditioning with sprints, we've used that as motivation. Hopefully, we can be a better team this season. Like you said, we've added some new players. We got the draft. We got some injured players that didn't play last year that are back. And so we're trying to form the identity of this new team, of the 2014 team. And right in the middle of training camp, that's kind of what we're focused on, is kind of the current, kind of the now, what we can do to be the best team this year in 2014.
And it is the 10-year anniversary of the last time the NFL made illegal contact in defense of holding a point of emphasis. Now, the last time around, you went from 29 to 49 touchdown passes. So this year, do you go from 55 to 75?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Hey, if Monte Ball wants to score 30 touchdowns and set the NFL running back record for touchdowns, I'm fine for that. As long as we're getting in the end zone, scoring points, giving our team a better chance to win, that's our job as an offense. You know, it's different, Mike, for if you're a fantasy football player. You know, for me, you know, a 10-7 win is a good thing for me. You know, that means the Broncos have won. You know, for a fantasy football team, you know, people like that 51-49, that Cowboys Broncos game last year. Not a lot of defense in that game, but a lot of points. But that's where fantasy football and for me, my job as a quarterback differ. But if you like fantasy football, kind of what we're talking about today, this new Fantasy Zone channel is pretty good for you.
Do you think that this renewed emphasis on illegal contact and defensive holding will pump up the offenses, pump up the passing games, and lead to more fantasy points?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, it depends how it's enforced. I still think there's a lot of speed out there on defense. There's fast guys rushing the quarterback. You can't hold the ball for a long time. There's great athleticism out there. So, you know, it doesn't change how fast the game is and how talented these players that you are playing against every single Sunday are, and how good the coaching that you're playing against. And so that remains to be seen. But certainly as an offensive player, hey, it's your job to get your team into the end zone. But, to me, if we have a pass play called and the defense is, you know, showing a certain defense and I check off to a run play and Monte Ball scores, I am just as happy about that as throwing a touchdown pass. But you know, I'm sure your fantasy football owners who have me on their team probably aren't as happy. So maybe you should draft Monte Ball this year.
You mentioned the new fantasy football channel, part of the DirecTV promotion that you're doing. Tell us more about it, and you get extra points if you do so in a wrap.
Well, once again, I'd be very careful insinuating that was a rap in that video, Mike. I think that could be very insulting to Jay-Z or Kanye West. I'm not sure what Eli and I were doing. We were truly out of the box. I know we had fun doing it. We had a lot of laughs. I had Clady and Vasquez and Franklin with me. Eli had three of his Giants offensive linemen, so we had a lot of laughs. But, you know, fantasy football is very popular, and now DirecTV has kind of brought this Fantasy Zone channel. It's kind of the red zone channel for fantasy football owners. And you can keep up with all your players so much faster and with their stats and how your players are doing. So Eli and I had fun doing it. And, of course, people, a lot of my teammates are having fun laughing at me in that video.
Now, when you did this tour last year in connection with DirecTV, you clued us in on tight end Julius Thomas, who became one of the young rising stars in the NFL. You've mentioned Monte Ball a couple of times. Is he the one guy that you would draft for your fantasy team other than Peyton Manning?
Well, we're excited about Monte, you know, being our running back. You know, Knowshon Moreno had a great year for us last year. Monte had a heck of a rookie year, but he's going to play just a much more expansive role this year. And we want our running game to be a big part of our offense. But, you know, to have a good running game, you got to have a number of backs. And I think Ball, Ronnie Hillman, they're going to play significant roles for us this year in the run game. Both catch the ball well out of the backfield. We throw a lot of passes to the running backs out of the backfield. So there's always somebody that's going to step up and, you know, be kind of a surprise player for you every single year. But I'm looking for great things out of our running backs this year. They're going to be an important part of our offense.
Well, we wish you all the best this year, Peyton. Congratulations on all your success and good luck this season and beyond.
Hey, thanks, Mike. We'll see you this fall.
Manning from yesterday's PFT on NBCSN. You mentioned Monte Ball a couple of times. If and when, well, for me, it's when I'm putting together my fantasy roster, I'm going to keep an eye on the possibility of getting Monte Ball, because if Peyton's saying Monte Ball publicly, good chance he's saying, I want Monte Ball to be the starting running back privately, and good chance that that's actually what will happen. Even better chance what will happen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to answer your questions right here on PFT Live. We'll be right back. Oh, it's PFT Planet time. We got plenty of questions, and we got hopefully plenty of answers to go along with those questions. Hopefully answers that actually match the questions that were asked, not that that's completely guaranteed. Let's give it a try. At Loney9. With more weapons around Megatron, that's Lions receiver Calvin Johnson, do you see his numbers going up or down? Well, it's not the other weapons that concern me as much as it's the chronic knee problems and other injuries that Calvin Johnson has been playing through. When the Lions were talking so openly before the draft about being interested in Sammy Watkins and Mike Evans, ultimately drafting Eric Ebron, a tight end who could have a significant impact in the passing game, after signing Golden Tate in free agency and having a full house at tailback and bringing back Brandon Pettigrew at tight end, you just have to wonder, are the Lions planning for a future without Calvin Johnson because of the injuries, because of cap numbers that are going up and up and up as he gets deeper into his second contract? And I think that, if anything, the presence of these other weapons will cause his numbers to go down, because until further notice, he's going to continue to be double-teamed on every snap, which opens up all of the other opportunities for quarterback Matthew Stafford. And I think we're going to see Stafford using those opportunities, and we just have to keep an eye on Johnson's health, especially those knee problems. How serious is it? And why, when it came time to put in that card with the 10th overall pick in the draft, why is it that the Lions opted for Eric Ebron, tight end that they arguably don't need, over a position of specific and acute need, defensive tackle? Aaron Donald, who was on the board, Nick Fairley dropping down the depth chart as he puts weight back on. How do you gain weight during training camp? And then Ndamukong Suh, who's in a contract year now. Curious decision, and it makes you wonder about what the Lions are thinking about the future with or without Calvin Johnson. Another question via the Twitter, Armando Cuesta 1, not to be confused with Armando Cuesta 2. What happened to Andre Brown? Hard to believe a seemingly talented running back can't come close to making the Texans roster. You know, Andre Brown showed flashes with the New York Giants. He kind of had a coming out party on a Thursday night against the Carolina Panthers in 2012. And he then disappears, and then he'd have a good game, a couple of 100-yard games last year, but never really felt like an integral part of that Giants offense. And look, he's been available for a couple of days now. Have the Giants signed him? People thought the Giants would pounce on him. So it when you see a guy get no touches in the preseason opener, a guy that was brought in as a free agent under new coaching staff, you have to wonder what that guy has said or done that has gotten the coaching staff to not like him, to not trust him, to not want to use him even in a preseason game. He found a way into Bill O'Brien's doghouse, some way, somehow. And I'm not going to speculate on how, but there are only so many ways you can get in a coach's doghouse, either lack of effort, either lack of understanding of the playbook, lack of ability, lack of a proper attitude. Some way, somehow, this guy got on the wrong side of Bill O'Brien, and Bill O'Brien decided not to continue the charade and move on from Andre Brown, and he continues to be available to anyone who may want him, and so far, no one wants him. What I want to do now is take a phone call, and we're going to go to TJ in Boston. TJ, you're on PFT Live. What's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Big fan of the show. I was just wondering about the Vikings wide receivers this year. Obviously, everyone's talking about Cordarrelle Patterson. And I'm just wondering about Jerome Simpson, not in the sense that he might become fantasy relevant, but everyone's saying that Norv Turner loves to utilize his big play wide receivers, obviously, last year with Josh Gordon. However, I mean, Jerome Simpson's sort of fallen under the radar where everyone's saying Cordarrelle Patterson's obviously the big play guy this year. Do you see anything happening with that?
Well, I think that it's an open book for anyone who steps up and shows that they have mastered the offense, shows that they can do what's expected, shows that they can catch the football on a consistent basis. Patterson's going to be the guy who gets the buzz because of what Josh Gordon did last year in the Norv Turner offense with a revolving door of nothing at quarterback. But when you've got Cordarrelle Patterson, you've got Greg Jennings, you've got Jerome Simpson listed as the backup to Jennings, you got Jairus Wright on the roster as well, who has been, he burned Richard Sherman last year. Now, I caught him a little bit flat-footed, but Jairus Wright's got potential. You got Kyle Rudolph, they paid a lot of money too. They expect him to have a big impact in the passing game. Simpson has shown some uncanny physical skills from time to time, especially when he leaps over defenders in a single bound. But he hasn't displayed the consistency. He hasn't displayed the production that the Vikings thought they were getting when they signed him over from the Bengals. And he took a pay cut this year, and he kind of upset about that. We'll see whether or not that turns into high production. I don't know that he's going to be one of your top receivers on a fantasy team, but I think he's a guy you want to keep an eye on, maybe take a flyer on him. Because if Patterson gets more attention than maybe his recent production and his talent level merits, then Simpson may benefit from that because he could be running around wide open, as could be Greg Jennings, Kyle Rudolph, and meanwhile, Adrian Peterson's going to get his 25 carries a game. Okay, back to the Twitter bag, box, whatever, at MM Primrose wants to know, why are so many teams doing joint practices? Well, Bill Belichick likes them, so there's got to be a benefit to doing them. Now, part of it is making sure there is a good level of structure and organization and control, i.e., no brawls like we saw between the Cowboys and the Raiders. It can be a valuable way to help get your team ready by going against people other than members of your team, because you can only deal with members of your own team for so long. So you get the teams together, you practice together, you get a different look, you get a different feel, you get an idea of what it's like week in and week out during the NFL regular season. And regardless what anyone thinks of Bill Belichick, the guy won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. If Bill Belichick is doing something, chances are it's a good idea to do it, and it's a good idea to break up the monotony of training camp by pitting. And it's only competition within a team is one thing. Competing against other players from other teams, a good thing if you can find a way to keep it from bubbling over into that mess that we saw yesterday. Another Twitter question from @capskins0818. If RG3 returns to 2012 form with the additions of DeSean Jackson and Jason Hatcher, can the Skins surprise everyone this year? I don't know how much of a surprise it would be if RG3 returns to his 2012 form. I think that when you look at the NFC East, it's the Eagles, then Washington, and Dallas and New York. I think the wheels are going to come off for both of those teams this year. So I think Washington has a chance, and that DeSean Jackson pendulum swing from Philly to Washington is going to help. But it all comes down to RG3. RG3 is the most powerful man in Washington who doesn't reside at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. RG3 won the showdown with the Shanahans. RG3 is the future of the franchise. RG3 is the golden child of the owner. And Jay Gruden's got to find a way to coach RG3 with the understanding that RG3 is the guy who would win a showdown with Jay Gruden. And we've seen Jay Gruden make comments about that. You know, RG3 tries to score a touchdown on every play, and he could end up with a touchdown or a sack fumble. And what do you do when he does that? Well, you can't bench him, even though there's indications via Mike Reese of ESPN Boston that Kirk Cousins actually looked better than RG3 in the joint practices last week between New England and Washington. And then you've got Gruden saying that 35 out of 45 passes from RG3 are good passes. Well, that's not a great percentage of what you expect from a guy, you know, in practice when no one is hitting him. So can he stay healthy? Can he thrive? Can he be coached the way he needs to be coached? Will he listen when the tough things are said to him? Does Jay Gruden feel comfortable saying the tough things to him? That's part of the subtext that determines whether or not he can get back to form. If he can, they can make a run at Philly. But I think Philly is still the class of that division. If anything, I see the gap getting bigger, not smaller, between Philly and the other teams. One more question before we close up shop for the day, and this one comes from at Matt Chrome or Matt K. Rome. Let's go with Matt K. Rome. When a player is cut or waived as injured, do they get a settlement of some kind as compensation? Future medical bills covered, et cetera, et cetera. Well, medical coverage kicks in beyond football based on how long a guy plays, and that all is covered by the CBA. But when a guy is injured and a guy is waived with an injury, what happens is, now if it's a guy who's got less than 4 years of experience, he's waived injured. If no one claims him, he goes back to that team's injured reserve list. And he stays there possibly for the entire season and gets his full pay. The other possibility is he could be released from IR if the team believes he's healthy, and you either settle that potential injury grievance by coming up with a number. Hey, you would have been healthy week 10, you would have been healthy week 12, you would have been healthy week 6, let's come to an agreement as to when you'd be healthy, we'll pay you through then. Or you get into a fight where the player gets cut and the team contends he's healthy, and then the player has to go out and put together a case, and it's an arbitration where the player says, well, actually, I wasn't healthy until the end of the season, I should get my full injured reserve payment, my full salary through the end of the season. And for a guy with a catastrophic injury, there's actually provision now to pay his salary, not just this year, but part of it in the year after that. That's one of the benefits of the new CBA. I'm going to stop it right there before I put anyone else to sleep. But you asked the question and we deemed it worthy of an answer because, look, it isn't fair that a guy gets injured and he gets thrust out into the wilderness. But there are provisions to take care of guys financially if they do suffer an injury and if they are cut as a result of it. We'll be back tomorrow with more PFT Live, and we'll be joining you at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time again on NBCSN for another edition of Pro Football Talk. We've got three teams we're going to talk about. I think the Jaguars and Jets are two of them. Go to ProFootballTalk.com and it'll tell you the third team. We'll get you ready for the 2014 season. We'll get you up to date on all the latest news around the NFL, and you can get up to date at any time. Just dial up ProFootballTalk.com in your browser, on your cell phone, on your tablet, wherever. And we'll get you all the latest right there, one-stop shopping. We'll see you back here again tomorrow. Have a great day.